We have now come to the fourth objection put forth by Benson Baden, which deals with the question, while you cleverly disguise the fact one of the authors of this work is a woman, aren't women forbidden to teach in the church? Well, Teresa Benz did not teach in the church. They only wrote this book. So I'm going to just pass on to objection 5. Question, let's get down to brass tacks here. Aren't you really a closet femme who wants to include women electors in the conclave? Isn't this the real reason you promoted this election from the beginning? And Benz and Baden answer, surely you jest. Would either of us have gone out of our way to adhere faithfully to all the articles of faith, law, and opinions in this work, and yet advocate unbridled liberty in something so exquisitely sensitive as the ordering of the conclave? If you must know the truth in this matter, others have suggested that I be allowed to vote, and I personally wish it was possible. I comment that although Mrs. Benz explains here that personally she wishes it was possible to elect the Pope, on page 459, it is written, or certain individuals may have doubts concerning their own qualifications as electors, and on this account may wish to exempt themselves. This is perfectly understandable and even praiseworthy, providing that such individuals do not prevail on others to do likewise or question the necessity of such an election. So although it is praiseworthy, according to Benz and Baden, for people not to want to take part, who have doubts concerning their own qualifications as electors, Mrs. Benz tells us she wants to take part in it if it's possible. But going on under this answer to objection 5 on page 348, but I would never consider such participation, even though we have found precedents in early elections and the opinions of medieval canonists to support the theory that women could be allowed to vote. But under Canon 21, even though an opinion in favor of liberty exists, probability cannot be used whenever there is a question of the means to eternal salvation. Since Pope Boniface VIII has declared that all must be subject to the Roman Pontiff in order to be saved, we must consider any election of a pope a means necessary to that end. What is the real meaning that Benz and Baden are trying to put forth in this statement? Since Pope Boniface VIII has declared that all must be subject to the Roman Pontiff in order to be saved, and that part of it is very true, but they go on, we must consider any election to a pope a means necessary to that end. And indirectly, that's very true. But this is certainly does not mean that babies and converts who were baptized and died during a period of interregnum could not be saved. Those babies and converts were never, strictly speaking, subject to the Roman Pontiff as an individual person. And even now, since the period of interregnum after the death of Pope Pius XII, newborn babies who were baptized then died, or converts who were baptized and died shortly thereafter without committing mortal sin, were saved, although they were not directly at that time subject to the Roman Pontiff as an individual person. It would seem here that Teresa Benz gives a very false conclusion to a teaching of the church. Benz and Baden go on, therefore, the participation of women cannot be countenanced. If women took part, those anxious to invalidate the election would claim that they could then be elected and resurrect Pope Joan. Furthermore, there is the danger of scandal whenever men and women are in close proximity of each other for an extended length of time. While there will surely be many women in the outer room praying and anxiously awaiting the triumphant Habemus Papam, there will be none found in the conclave. It will require a great deal more than a cheap shot like this to topple all the evidence amassed in this book. When David Podden and Teresa Benz receive your copy of this tape, please be kind enough to tell myself and also all others who follow you who might receive this tape the honest truth. Did Teresa Benz and or any other women actually take part in the conclave, or did they follow this which was written in this objection? There will be no women found in the conclave. I was under the impression that some of the women then present did vote. Can Teresa Benz truthfully state that no women voted in the attempted election of David Podden as a pope? Under objection 6, we come to the question, speaking of cheap shots, don't you deal more than a few of these to the Jewish people when you accuse them of working throughout the centuries to destroy the church? Are you trying to revive anti-Semitism? I'm not going to record the entire answer on this tape just now, but there is one sentence that might need a comment, which states, no one man was at the same time more firmly opposed to the efforts of the Jews and yet solicitous for their spiritual welfare than the inestimable Reverend Dennis Fahey. And you might say that Patrick Henry is now being nitpicky, but that statement itself is not correct. It's a lie. What about Jesus Christ? Wasn't he more firmly opposed to the efforts of the Jews and yet more solicitous for their spiritual welfare than Reverend Father Dennis Fahey? We come now to objection 7. Question. A few priests and laymen cannot possibly restore the church today. What precedent can you possibly quote in support of this? And for their answer, Benz and Bodden give a rather lengthy explanation of how St. Bernard, a religious, called on lay rulers to assist him in vindicating the rights of a man who most considered as a pretender to the papal throne. Benz and Bodden end this answer to objection 7, stating, St. Bernard's triumph speaks for itself. It gives us the courage and inspiration to continue our work, which, after all, is not so different from that of this great saint who lived some 750 years ago. I comment, St. Bernard did nothing similar to what Benz and Bodden did. St. Bernard fought with the true bishops on earth to uphold the rights of the true bishop of Rome. But Benz and Bodden had nothing to do with the true bishops, as they persist in claiming anti-Pope Michael I is the true vicar of Jesus Christ. We come to objection 8. In substituting the laws of canonical elections for Pope Pius XII's constitution on papal elections, he overlooked the fact that Pius XII actually allowed cardinals who had been excommunicated to vote in the conclave. Doesn't this serve to topple your entire argument on this point? For an answer, Benz and Bodden give some good information, but along toward the end of the first long paragraph, they write, a man who is not a Catholic can never be a pope. And that's a very true statement of the church. To be the pope, you have to be a Catholic and you have to be a male. But we already know that in the external forum, David Bodden is a non-Catholic. Therefore, according to their own teaching, David Bodden can never be a pope. We know that David Bodden was a member of a non-Catholic sect. We find that out on the next several pages, 354 and 355. Secondly, we know the church teaches that members of non-Catholic sects are not members of the Catholic Church. Heresy, schism, apostasy, and formal excommunication put one outside the mystical body of Christ, according to Pope Pius XII, in his encyclical on the mystical body of Christ. And thirdly, we know that David Barden, according to Canon 2200, must absolutely prove he was always a Catholic and never a heretic. Or this very page, we're on here now, page 352, from their own writings, David Barden and Teresa Benz prove that David Barden can never be eligible for the papacy. Benz and Barden make the statement that they are Catholics in good standing, not excommunicated. However, they don't prove it. They do prove that they had need for the abjuration of error and the profession of faith before a cleric could absolve them, and that never took place. And they were not brought back into the true church in the external form according to the laws of the church. And therefore, the obvious conclusion follows: David Barden is not a valid vicar of Jesus Christ. Benz and Barden conclude this answer to objection 8, stating, since heresy concerns the faith or the lack thereof, and is punished specifically by disposition, Canon 188, number 4, we must believe Pius XII wished to exclude heretics from the voting. As I've been pointing out, all, including David Barden, were outside the church in the external forum when the votes were cast that supposedly elected David Barden as Pope Michael I. Pope Pius XII then obviously wished to exclude such people from voting. If they did find a priest who brought them back into the church and everything was good, let them bring forth the proof. Canon 2200 demands it. I personally was there the night before the election and talked to them at length. No mention was made of any priest. None was seen around that day, nor the next, the day of the election. It was very uncharitable for them if they had a true priest in the area not to mention it to those who were there to visit them, trying to talk them out of their election the night before it all happened. We come now to objection 9, question. You have no college degree, no official theological training. Educationally speaking, you are paupers. How can we believe you when you have no credibility? Their answer: educational paupers we are, in the modern day sense of the word, and proud of it. We have known a great many people who have trotted themselves off to secular and even, quote, Catholic, unquote, colleges, only to return as flaming intellectual liberals. Colleges today disseminate poison, carefully tucked between the papers of their humanistic textbooks. Any university of, quote, higher learning, unquote, which does not teach Catholic doctrine and uphold high moral standards is not an institution of, quote, higher learning, unquote, but a disseminator of anti-supernaturalism. Learning is fine as long as all learning is orientated to Christ and His church. If non-Catholics wish to fill such halls, we cannot prevent them, but no Catholic can attend these schools without placing their faith in grave danger. As Catholics, they must heed the dictates of Canon 1372, quote, the education of all Catholics from their childhood must be such that not only shall they be taught nothing contrary to the Catholic faith and good morals, but religious and moral training shall occupy their principal place in the curriculum. Parents have the right and most serious obligation of providing for the Christian education of children, unquote of Canon 1372. I comment on page 344, Benz and Barden wrote, we must fulfill the duties common to our state in life. And we have just read this Canon 1372, stating that parents have the right and most serious obligation of providing for the Christian education of children. Benz and Barden spoke the truth when they said no Catholic can attend these schools, these non-Catholic apostate schools, without placing their faith in grave danger. Benz and Bodden were speaking mostly of higher learning schools, colleges, but it applies equally true for grade schools and high schools. Question I have to ask is, why then does Mrs. Teresa Benz send her children to the public school? No one can attend these schools without placing their faith in grave danger. Parental obligations are to look out for the welfare, spiritual welfare of their children. Toward the bottom of this page 353, they go on and answer this. As to credibility, people forget where the word itself sprang from. Credibility evolved from the Latin credere, credenda. Webster's dictionary defines credenda as doctrines to be believed, articles of faith. If this is the true meaning of credibility, then surely we possess it. After citing countless doctrines and articles of faith in support of our plan for action, it is true that Benz and Bodden cited countless doctrines and articles of faith, or at least a great number of them. But then, as we just saw here in the same page, they did not observe those. See Canon 1372 above as one of many examples. I'm going to just go on to objection 10. Question, by the strictest reasoning set forth in part 2, one of you is not even a Catholic in the eyes of the Church, having been born and baptized after the election of John 23rd, how can we take the word of a non-Catholic? And I have already covered part of this objection. And the answer, as David Bodden explained, he is a non-Catholic. He wrote here, if there was someone whom I could approach to be received with certainty into the Church, I would jump at the opportunity. And then immediately he wrote, I submit myself to the Pope for judgment. What Pope will he submit himself to? To himself, who when he was not even elected at the time he wrote this book and did not know who would be elected? But since he supposedly was elected, then we need to be reminded that a pope, as with every cleric, cannot absolve himself or bring himself back into the Church. With the exception of the Holy Eucharist, not even a pope can give any sacrament to himself. If David Bodden was not received into the Church before his papal election or attempted papal election, he still is out of the Church, unless he's met some true bishop or priest since that time who absolved him, and that's certainly not been brought forth publicly. They talk in their book of having ordination and consecration of the new pope. Who's going to do that? So as David Bodden wrote, I'm a baptized non-Catholic. There's a doubt about his Catholicity in his own mind. So maybe this is the place to review a few things from a practical course of doctrinal instructions based on the teachings of the Catechism of the Council of Trent, prepared and arranged by Father Charles Cullen and Father John McHugh in Premartyr 1941, from pages 73 and what follows. There are two rules or norms according to which a person must shape his conduct, namely the commandments of God and his own conscience. Conscience is the judgment of the practical reason which decides that a particular action is in conformity with or opposition to God's law. We are never permitted to act contrary to the dictates of our conscience. For as St. Paul says, all that is not of faith, that is according to one's conscience, is sinful. Romans 14:23. And again we must know, but while one must always act according to the dictates of his conscience, it does not follow that in doing so he may not, under certain conditions, be guilty of sin, for there is such a thing as a false conscience. Going on, we learn, it is never lawful to act with a doubtful conscience, because that would be carelessly running the risk of doing the wrong thing and so of sinning. We might comment here that there are many people in the world today who act with a doubtful conscience, although it is never lawful. People have doubts that such and such a priest has jurisdiction if they don't actually know the truth. They doubt whether that priest could absolve them. They doubt whether that priest received valid orders. And if they know their faith, they're almost certain he has not the ability to function as a licit priest. And there's made doubt that such and such a man is a pope, whether it be Paul VI, John Paul II, David Bodden, or many others in the world today. It is never lawful to act with a doubtful conscience, because that would be carelessly running the risk of doing wrong and so of sinning. These priests go on to tell us, when one's conscience is in error through his own fault, because he does not wish to know what is right, or because he has neglected to use the ordinary diligence and interest to determine what is right, he has a false conscience and is in bad faith and is guilty of sin every time he acts according to such a conscience. That all go on to section 11 in Benzenbaden's book. Question. It is obvious that you intend to discredit the clergy because you have been unable to join their ranks. Isn't this your purpose for writing about jurisdiction, to put all these priests out of business? Answer. This calumny has been with me for some time. True, I have longed to pursue a priestly vocation since the age of 10. Yes, I was dismissed without cause from the Society of St. Pius X, and was never able to make connections with a Tookline bishop to receive holy orders. But even if I had been ordained, I would still be a layman in the eyes of the Church, owing to a Roman decision, as are my fellow classmates who have received holy orders. However, my only reason for working out the information on jurisdiction was to find out God's law and obey it, nothing more, nothing less. I only say that if you ever need to find out for the record or some other reason that David Bodden belonged to the Society of St. Pius X, it's here in black and white on page 355, and that he was to some degree maybe trying to find a Tookline bishop who would ordain him. Objection 12. Your motives for circulating the information concerning Lefebvre and Leonhardt and their ties to Masonry are suspect, because you have reason to attack Lefebvre owing to your dismissal from Armada. Answer. Simply not true. I first read this information within 2 months of resigning from the Society of St. Pius X in St. Mary's, 1981. And David Bodden gives some information, then he goes on. The argument runs as follows. Masons are apostates, therefore an apostate cannot have the proper intention to confect, receive, or confer the sacraments. Since I consider this opinion as at least probable and in harmony with the teachings of St. Thomas on apostasy and on what is required to validly confect the sacraments, I considered Leonhardt's consecrations and therefore Lefebvre's ordinations and consecrations as doubtful. I admit the possibility that he may be valid. However, the Church teaches that we must be certain about the validity of a sacrament. In effect, a doubtful sacrament is no sacrament, as it must be conditionally reconferred. I have never publicly promoted this theory, precisely because I consider it solidly probable, and I did not want to jeopardize its reception by those Catholics who harbored unjust prejudice against me. There are many other reasons to reject Lefebvre, such as his probable membership in a secret society and his blatant heresies. I resigned from the society thinking these men to be priests. This required me to look not only validity in the sacraments, but laicity as well, which is required under pain of mortal sin and can in some cases result in excommunication or suspension. Sir David Bodden is explaining that it is required under pain of mortal sin to only receive licit sacraments as well as valid sacraments, and no excuse ever justifies committing even a willful venial sin. Yet on page 355, David Bodden confesses he desired to receive illicit ordinations from the Fabian Tuchline bishops. We should conclude that that must have been before he knew they were illicit. And thanks be to God that he has found out the truth about these illicit bishops. But now that he knows, let him not go to any kind of an illicit bishop trying to get himself ordained or consecrated after proclaiming to be a pope. This proves that David Bodden still must find the true bishops before he can do anything about carrying on the spiritual life of the church, dispensing the sacraments, or carrying on apostolicity. Without ordination, David Bodden does not carry on the fourth mark of the church. They've proven in their book that true bishops exist. They should have found them before they went ahead with the papal election. Would have made things much better. They still have the law obligation to do so before they can effect anything that is in the mind of the church proper. And now we come to objection 13. The question: you deny the necessity of the sacraments by making them totally unavailable by your reasoning. Answer: we absolutely do not deny the necessity of the sacraments. In fact, a strong motivation for electing a pope is to again be able to frequent sacraments, which we long for, especially confession and Holy Communion. Do I need to comment that David Bodden, claiming to be a pope now, has certainly not helped this situation in the least? I've just explained he must find a true bishop for ordination and consecrations to help in the sacramental life of the church. David Bodden proved that trying to obtain illicit sacraments from Took and Lefebvre or someone else is not the mind of the church. It can be a mortal sin. In fact, it's required under pain of mortal sin to find the true bishops. Election as a pope did nothing for this cause. Benz and Bodden go on in this answer to objection 13. What we point out is that the sacraments, being one of the supreme gifts of our Lord Jesus Christ to his holy church, must not only be preserved in a manner which guarantees their validity, but they must also be treated reverently and devoutly in perfect conformity with Christ's law. So here Benz and Bodden truthfully told us that the sacraments must be preserved in a manner which guarantees their validity. And this rules out Lefebvre and the Tuchline bishops, for many people in the world have presented a lot of evidence, including here David Bodden, that their orders are doubtful, and what they are doing is obviously illicit. Benz and Bodden continue. Pope Benedict XV promulgated Canon 682, which reads, quote, the laity has the right to receive from the clergy the spiritual goods and especially the necessary means of salvation according to the rules of ecclesiastical discipline, unquote. Pope Benedict XV has bound us, as Christ promised he could, and no power on earth, save another pope, could ever loose what he has bound. But I comment, what has Pope Benedict XV bound us to do? Certainly not to receive illicit or invalid sacraments. He tells us we have the right to receive from the clergy spiritual goods. Well, it is certainly not a spiritual good to receive illicit sacraments or invalid sacraments. The attempted papal election will only complicate things if God wills for the true bishops to elect another pope. David Baden thinks that these bishops must approve him as a pope. Let us review some other things from the Council of Trent. In Denzinger's book under number 960, we learn that the Council of Trent teaches, those who by their own temerity take these offices upon themselves are not ministers of the church, but are to be regarded as thieves and robbers who have not entered by the door. And then we soon come to the canons of the Sacrament of Orders. And under number 966, we come to canon 6. If anyone says that in the Catholic Church a hierarchy has not been instituted by divine ordinance, which consists of the bishops, priests, and ministers, let him be anathema. So here we have the proof of the teaching. There will always be bishops, priests, and ministers. Note the plural is used. That means at least two bishops, two priests, and two deacons will always be on the face of the earth until the consummation of the world. That is of divine ordinance. That's part of the church herself. Canon 7. If anyone says that the bishops are not superior to priests, or that they do not have the power to confirm and to ordain, or that the power which they have is common to them and to the priests, or that orders conferred by them without the consent or call of the people or of the secular power are invalid, or that those who have been neither rightly ordained nor sent by ecclesiastical and canonical authority, but come from a different source, are lawful ministers of the word and of the sacraments, let him be anathema. Out of those people who follow the Lefebvreline bishops and the Tookline bishops, consider that the Council of Trent has not told them that they are going to be anathema. The bishops they follow and the priests ordained by those bishops are not sent by ecclesiastical and canonical authority. They come from a different source. They're not lawful ministers of the word and of the sacraments. And if anyone says they are, including themselves, if they say they are lawful ministers, the infallible church contradicts them and says, let them be anathema. If those who of their own temerity take these offices upon themselves, they are not ministers of the church, but are to be guarded as thieves and robbers who have not entered by the door. If David Baden tries to force some bishop to consecrate him or ordain him, he's not called upon by the church. It's his own temerity to take this office upon himself. He is not a minister of the church, but a thief and a robber. According to the definition of Jesus Christ, the eternal truth, and his infallible church. I have already quoted this last section of the answer to objection 13, but it's well to review it again. David Baden and Teresa Benz wrote, since the church will last to the end as Christ constituted it, we shall affirm that there exist bishops canonically appointed who, for their diocese, can and do properly confer the sacraments. Again, as stated before, I will ask, why could not Bishop Benz and Baden let these true bishops who do exist elect the true pope if it's God's holy will? These truly Catholic bishops are the ones God is using to carry on the sacramental life of the church and the apostolicity of the church, whereas David Baden does neither. Now we come to objection 14. Question: how can you quote from men who were later excommunicated for apostasy and heresy? Doesn't this invalidate your statements? And the answer, Benz and Baden write, St. Thomas said, quote, remember every good thing that you hear and consider not who said it, unquote. That's good advice. Consider everything that is good in this book and apply it to your life. But St. Thomas did not say, consider everything you hear, and consider not who said it. Only consider the good things, and only apply those to your life. You might also consider the bad things people have said, and the contrary teachings they point out, as opposed to the truth of the Catholic Church. And remember that they said these things, and then you will not be so likely to fall into their trap and follow them on their way to perdition, unless they amend their own lives. Benz and Bond go on to state, the works we quote from are duly approved according to the laws of the Church. In our opinion, they are the best presentation of the subject, but by no means the only presentation. Our research shows that they are in harmony with the common and constant teaching of the Catholic Church. As pointed out before, not all these authors and what they teach are in conformity with the mind of the Church. The old Catholic Arnold Harris Matthew, whom they quoted from, does not have his teachings in harmony with the common and constant teaching of the Catholic Church. Church history reminds us of the terrible persecution in Japan for about 200 years. Now let us consider something that could possibly have taken place during that time. After 30, 40, 50, or 100 years, let us say that 3 to 10 of those people decided they needed to elect a pope to save God's true church. They say, the Catholic Church teaches there must be bishops living with an office, authority, and jurisdiction, but we do not know where they are at. No one in our whole country has known of a valid, licit bishop with jurisdiction for over 30 years. We have 6 of us non-Catholics together. Therefore, let us proceed to elect one from among us to be the Pope of the Catholic Church. They then abjure their heresy and errors, one at a time, before the others then present. Now they claim they are all Catholics in good standing. Next, they elect one from among this group, following the exact same steps and rules that were used later when a few people attempted to elect David Baden and proclaimed him as a true pope. These Japanese people say, now that we have a true pope again, all he needs to do is find some bishop that will accept what we have done. Our pope can convince the bishop to ordain and consecrate him, and we will have the great glory of being known as the wise and active Catholics who did what was necessary to save God's church. I ask, if some Japanese people had actually done such a thing during a time when there actually was a true period of interregnum in the church, would you accept the man they elected as a true vicar of Jesus Christ? If you answer yes, please explain why. If the one the people in Japan attempted to elect is not accepted as a true pope, is it correct to accept David Baden as a true pope? If you answer yes, please explain why. Benz and Baden wrote in their book on page 407, a doubtful pope is no pope. I, for one, have doubts that David Baden is a true vicar of Jesus Christ. Therefore, I ask, especially David Baden and Teresa Benz, when you receive your copy of these tapes, to answer these questions and send them back to myself. Then if anyone asks me for your reply, I can just simply send what you send me. Is the Norris Ordo sect Catholic or non-Catholic? Is the Society of St. Pius X sect Catholic or non-Catholic? Are the bishops and their followers coming from the line of Archbishop Tuck after he signed the documents of Vatican II and the consecrations in Spain Catholic or non-Catholic, does the true church teach that someone becomes a non-Catholic if you attend a non-Catholic sect? Does David Bodden believe that everyone who has belonged to a non-Catholic sect must be received back into the true Catholic Church through the abjuration of error, profession of faith, administered by a truly Catholic bishop or priest who has faculties to bring them back into the church? Were David Bodden and all those who attempted his election as a pope truly good Catholics in good standing at the time of their election? Did any of them take an abjuration and profession of faith before a Catholic priest or bishop who could and did absolve them and bring them back into the true church? Did David Bodden and Teresa Benz teach correctly in their book that if this did not happen, the electors were not qualified to validly elect a pope? If those who attempted to elect a pope were not qualified and Catholics in good standing, does the Catholic Church say they could still validly elect a true pope? Do you agree that someone is in schism who denies a true vicar of Jesus Christ as being the head of the visible church? Do you also agree that if someone claims a person who is not the pope to be a pope, he also goes into schism? Do you believe that those who are formal heretics or formal schismatics are not members of the one holy Catholic and apostolic church, outside of which there is no salvation? Did Benz and Bodden write the truth on page 318 of their book when they said papal election is ordinarily a jurisdictional act, but because there are none more qualified to perform this act, and for this reason only, we're allowed to proceed? Do you believe that truly Catholic bishops are more qualified to elect a Catholic pope than a few lay people who join non-Catholic sects and who were never brought back into the true church? Did Teresa Benz vote at the papal election for David Bodden? Thank you for listening, and I will await your reply to these questions. Please do not be ambiguous. Answer them straightforward. Send them in a written form so that they can be passed on, and let David Bodden and Teresa Benz justify themselves if they think I have said anything against them on this tape. Please send your correspondence to Patrick Henry, 7067 South Tumbleweed Drive, Safford, Arizona, 85546. May Jesus, Mary, and Saint Joseph grant to each and every one of us the grace to live our lives in perfect uniformity with God's most holy will, accept the truth, live the truth, and die in the true Catholic Church in the state of sanctifying grace, to be with Him forever and eternity. Ora pro nobis.